Has Barack Obama written off Indiana in 2012? What the president said in a White House interview. The governor fines $300 million. Will it lead to a tax refund? Retirement plans for the Chief Justice, state fair settlement offers, and the effort to lure the Chicago Mercantile Exchange to Indiana. That plus orangutans at the zoo and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 9, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Barack Obama promised to visit Indiana in 2012 but made no commitment to campaign here. The president's comments came in a White House interview with Wish TV's Debbie Knox. He was asked to react to reports that his campaign has written off this state, even though he carried it in 2008.
I was very proud to win Indiana. I love the state. I love the people there. And we're going to spend time in Indiana. It may not be campaign time. It may be time me visiting an auto plant. It may be time where I'm announcing a new initiative to help our veterans get jobs.
Is Indiana already in the red column for 2012? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, what did you hear the president say?
Well, it was awkward. I mean, why would you say that? I mean, even if you're going to come to the state anyway and just do, quote, presidential appearances, you're still coming to the state. So there was no reason to say it may not be for campaigning. That was kind of silly for him to say that, I thought. But we all know that it's hard to distinguish a line between a campaign visit and a presidential visit when you're here to do something else, either to give a check to somebody or to do some kind of other ceremonial thing. I'm sure that his political people are looking at this state and thinking it's going to be a lot more difficult this time than it was last time. At least there's a lot of buyer's remorse in Indiana about President Obama. On November 22nd, his approval rating was 39%. So he's not doing well here right now.
That's from a Republican poll, right?
Survey, 800 sample statewide.
Okay.
And so he's not doing real well here, and they know that. So, but there's a lot of time, and you don't know who this opponent's going to be.
Yeah, it's too early to write off Indiana.
Way too early, and I don't think that's what he meant to say, to write off Indiana.
Is that what you interpreted?
No. No, I didn't actually. I think what will happen with this is a year is not one eternity in political lore. It's two anyway. And I think it in large part depends on who the opponent is. I mean, I don't underestimate the Republicans' ability to nominate a crazy person for the nomination. And I think anything is up for grabs under those circumstances. And if I were he and his campaign staff, I'd say let's wait and let's take a look at what it looks like and then decide where we're spending our resources.
That thinking would be consistent with offering an interview to an Indiana television station, right?
And it's not the first time. I mean, Channel 8's been out there before, and I'm sure that other stations have had or will have that opportunity. You know, think about the $1 billion that's projected that President Obama will have in his campaign war chest, and it's hard to imagine that he won't spend some of that money in Indiana, which he did happen to carry last time around. I agree with Mike. I think it's going to be more difficult for him this time. But he's going to have the resources, and he's got the presidential pulpit to make those kinds of visits. So I think he's very much a player in Indiana.
In 2008, he had a primary challenge here. He wasn't in office. 48, 49 campaign visits. We're not going to see that no matter what.
No, I don't think there's any way we'll see anything close to the 48 visits he made in 2008 for a number of reasons. I mean, there are other states that I think he felt very comfortable. We're in his column. We're in the blue column, if you want to use that nomenclature. in 2008 that are going to be battleground states in all likelihood, where he will have to expend time, energy, his own profile in a way he didn't have to necessarily in 2008. The planets all aligned perfectly, I think, for him in 2008 in Indiana. Certainly the visits helped. The McCain candidacy never really took off. McCain did he even, I don't think he came at all
once.
During
he
the
came, or actually one, twice. Twice. Actually twice.
Right. Maybe to shake two.
Once on the day before Election Day.
Which was probably the die was cast at that point already. So the planets aligned. And even then, Barack Obama won by, I mean, it was a fraction
whisker,
of a whisker. And that's with everything going his direction. So you have to assume, given the polling, which, again, that's a snapshot. Anything could change. It's so dependent on the economy. It's so dependent on who the Republicans nominate. But if you want to play the game, if the election were held today, I don't think this is a state that would return to the Obama column.
We'll see what happens in a year.
Yeah, it's anything can happen.
All right. The state lost track of $300 million in corporate taxes over the last 5 years. The money was recently found by an auditor, and it's been returned to the state general fund. If it's not spent by June and the economy holds up, it will go back to taxpayers. That would be the result of the new law the governor signed this year. If the state budget surplus exceeds 10% of the budget, that would be about $1.4 billion. The extra money is to be split between teachers' pensions and taxpayers. Daniels projects that the surplus will be $1.7 billion at the end of the fiscal year next June. If so, the average taxpayer would see a $50 refund in 2013.
There's a very good possibility from everything we know that we'd be in the zone triggering an automatic refund to taxpayers next year.
Hoosier families need tax relief now. The potential for tax relief is greater now than it has been.
That's House Democratic spokesman John Shorg suggesting that if there's going to be a tax cut or a tax refund, it should probably happen before June. Ann Delaney, Democrats now want an independent audit. Also, why?
Well, I mean, this isn't a rounding error. This is $320 million they lost track of. And the question is, how did they lose it? And what else is out there? You need somebody from outside the state, and this isn't even a partisan issue because Tim Berry agrees with the fact that he isn't in a position to audit, and an outside audit would be good. You need an independent auditor to come in and look at why this happened. And, you know, great, it's 320 to the good. Are there other ones out there? Are there other funds out there? Are there minuses out there we don't know about? You know, if you had your checking account with your bank and they called you up and said, oh, you know, we misplaced some money for you for a few years, and you now have 10,000 more, you jump for joy. And then the next thing you do is figure out where you're moving your money because you can't rely on that bank, and that's where we are with the state.
Well, it's ironic that this is the same amount of money that was cut from schools last year. Even if you buy the governor's
explanation. Do you really think they're that good that they would hide 300 and some million because they don't want to give it to schools?
That's not where I was going, well, actually.
I'd like to know where you were going.
Why hold on to the money? Why is the governor's position we need to hold on to this money? Aren't there needs that have gone unmet because of circumstances with the economy?
I think they're holding on to the money because they need to hold on to the money. We don't know when this economy is going to turn around. One of the reasons that our previous question, Obama's numbers are as bad as they are, is because he didn't turn the economy around the way they said they were going to turn it around, and it's not happening. And so the money was never lost, for starters. The state earned interest on this money. This was an E-Verify corporate income tax situation where the program was not changed to where it would go from collections to the general fund. So the money wasn't lost.
The money was paid.
Interest was made on the money the whole time.
But it wasn't in the general fund.
It was found by an internal audit that was set up in 2007, the system for the internal audit. One of the auditors was checking a $25,200 entry, and he was going to follow it through the process. When he got to the end of the process, it didn't finish. And that's how I discovered it, thank goodness that he did. But that makes our current situation, where the current projections are pretty good for state revenues, and with this additional money, we're going to be in pretty good shape come next year.
But the governor, you know, started this off by saying Christmas has come early. There are questions that need to be asked.
I think that's right. And there's probably a danger here in being too flippant, you know, with the Charlie Brown tree as a set prop and the suggestion that, oh, hey, well, this is great, our ship has come in. Because a lot of people have been hurting in Indiana, not just agencies, but certainly we've seen, think of how many people have lost their jobs, how many service cuts there have been during what was clearly a very, very trying period financially for this state. So I think there's a danger in terms of perception in treating this as if, hey, this is great, let's throw a party. And I'm not saying he's suggesting throw a party, but there are two other quick points I'd make. One is because he has prided himself and his administration has prided himself on being
business acumen.
On this is mm-hmm. the management operation. We are going to, you know, make the lines disappear at the license branch. We're going to manage funds
which
to the nth
did.
Degree.
Which they did.
So it's kind of hard to, what if, I mean, you could ask a rhetorical question. What would happen if this auditor had not come forward or had been tracing this?
We would still only had $1 billion.
The other thing is, in terms of his legacy, what politician, this probably works out best for him in the end, because now he has the opportunity to have this refund. And
when you're talking about perception of this, I think the legacy factor is important. If he establishes this automatic refund and then can implement it when other states are creating tax increases, that would be an important piece of the legacy, correct?
Well, that's one way to view that, Jim. And you know, I won't disagree to the sense that I'm sure he's got an eye toward how he will be viewed down the road by history. But I think it's also important to remember, too, I think John makes a good point about the business of government aspect of this. $300 million is not a rounding error. It's a large amount of money, and to have lost track of that requires that it be figured out and understood completely. And I think an investigation, I think that the governor, I'm surprised that the governor didn't say at this news conference that he was ordering an investigation and that he was going to get to the bottom of this and to reassure folks that it wouldn't happen again.
Well, he gave the sense that he's gotten to the bottom of it.
Well, you don't know that.
I think you can take his word for that, or you can have a more transparent and holistic approach with this. And I think that that's, I'm surprised, actually, that the Democrats haven't been more forceful than they have about this,
because I think
this is politically a problem for the governor,
potentially. I think it is, too, because you don't know. You were supposed to take him at his word for this, and yet when he proposed the budget he proposed and told us what we had to spend in the last General Assembly, he wasn't telling the truth. Now, he may have been mistaken because of the ineptitude of his staff, but that's the kind of thing that heads ought to roll on, okay? They ought to roll, and there ought to be an investigation under oath as to why this happened and how it's not going to happen again.
So two things. Suggesting to people that $300 million was there for education, it wasn't. All of this money wasn't even collected yet at the time. Only a portion of the money was collected at the time.
Well, about a third of it has come in the last several months.
That's exactly right.
So two-thirds
of it. Don't say that that's true. It's not an apples and apples deal. And the second thing is the idea that, one, when they're going to give money back, the $50, the governor originally wanted all the money after you go over the threshold.
And it was
the legislators decided that half of it goes to teachers' pensions with Democrat support.
Right.
So now for them to come back and say, no, it shouldn't go to
teachers'
pensions.
That's
what Sorge said. However,
about when the O'Bannon administration had a refund program, it was roundly criticized by the Republicans.
Right.
For $100.
Right.
So I'm interested why we haven't heard from the Democrats about it.
And the other thing is, if you want real tax relief, what you do with that is you give people at the bottom end of the spectrum a break. You keep the 3.4% at the top and you drop it down to 3 or something like that for people who are really hurting. Instead of $50, which frankly will get
$50 on average. I think it would be a percentage of what your tax bill is. All right. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, what should be done with the $300 million found in a state account? Your choices are A, give a tax refund, B, give it to schools, or C, save it for a rainy day. Last week's question was, did the Super Bowl shuffle video hurt the reputation of Indianapolis? 27% said yes. 19% said it reinforced it. 54% said, does anybody have a sense of humor? If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Randall Shepard is retiring as Chief Justice of the Indiana Supreme Court. Shepard will leave the bench in March after 25 years as Chief Justice. During that time, he directed changes that led to fewer criminal appeals and more civil cases being heard by the Supreme Court. He also opened the door to television cameras and webcasts during arguments. Shepard was elected Chief Justice 5 times. I asked what he will miss most about the job.
It's a rainbow that looks different almost every day you walk in the door. And Not only is it intriguing in the things that we're called upon to do, but I work in this wonderful building, and I get to watch the comings and the goings in state government and elsewhere, sort of close up. It's a wonderful place to spend a life.
John Katzenberger, will there ever be another quite like Randall Shepherd?
Well, you know, I hope there is, but that's not to say that anything bad. He's had a most remarkable run as not only a justice of the Supreme Court, but the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I think Indiana is looked upon nationally for the way the court has been administered and the way the court has pioneered programs, and so it will be very difficult for anybody to match his record, that's for sure.
This caught everybody by surprise.
Oh, yeah, I think even his own staff probably was caught off guard. This is a guy who it would have been his prerogative largely to stay on the bench, what, another decade?
10 years, yeah.
Until his mandatory retirement. So I think it was a shock. I think it surprised a lot of people, and I would echo what John said. I'm a big fan of his, the way that the court has changed under his leadership. It's dealing with more substantive civil litigation issues and those kinds of big issue questions, as opposed to should this guy get an extra year or yeah. not taken off his sentence. I mean, he was the real deal. And in a personal sense, his first year in the Supreme Court as Chief Justice was the first year I went to the State House with the Indianapolis News. So, you know, you talk about how kids have never known anything yeah. other than such and such. Yeah. Well, I've never known anything other than Chief Justice.
Should you consider retirement?
I think you're suggesting.
What's his vote on that?
Fortunately, those are not elected positions in Indiana.
He's most proud of the changes he's made in trial courts.
It should be. I mean, he's been a leader every step of the way. He's brought the courts into this century, and he's done a remarkable job. He's been a great Chief Justice. Somebody's looked him. Upon throughout the United States as being a true leader in this area. And I think there are great things ahead for him. He was ready to make a change in his career. And I think he could be a great university president. It's hard telling where Randy Shepherd's going to end up, but his leadership for the state of Indiana is far from over, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the administration of the court is obviously something, but he's also done more than that. He made the court, helped the court transition from elected judges
right.
To appointed judges, and sometimes that road can be pretty rocky. But you know, he took the court above politics. The Evan Bayh residency suit being an example. Another
and
example
I
is
with him on that one.
Yeah, well, you're wrong.
It's still new, right?
The other issue that he deserves a lot of credit for, the death penalty cases. I mean, in the Paula Cooper case, stepping in and saying yep. Capital punishment for a 15-year-old is cruel and unusual, and Indiana has not had the same kinds of problems with death penalty cases that other states have had, because the process is in place to make sure the quality of representation for those accused is there. And that's really, that in technology, and JTAC, and domestic violence, and protective orders, all are a function of his leadership.
Exactly. And change, while it's difficult and unsettling, I'm comforted by the fact when I did go to the State House in 87, Jim Shella was all but dean of the State House press corps at that point.
Thank you. Had
to get that in there.
Let me also say this. He's probably the best orator in all of Indiana.
The state of the judiciary
people,
speech will be far
for
different.
For people who have a chance to hear him give speeches.
I thought you were talking
about Shelley. No. I'm talking about Randy Shepherd.
Maybe he was going to retire.
Right. That's right.
I'm glad you clarified that.
Attorney General Greg Zeller announced proposed settlements this week for victims of the State Fair stage collapse. $300,000 will go to the families of those who died. The remainder of the $5 million fund was divided up among victims who were physically injured in the collapse and incurred medical bills. 58 people have been offered the equivalent of 65% of their medical bills. The only person offered more money is 19-year-old Brad Humphrey. He was paralyzed for life. For that reason, the state decided to boost his compensation. The offer stands at $503,000.
I will say personally that deciding how much to pay the victims was extremely difficult.
It's a model, frankly, in those rare cases where you need to do it. Thank goodness, rare. It's a model as to how to do it.
Ken Feinberg there, preceded by Attorney General Greg Zeller. John Schwanis, will the settlement stand?
I think they probably will. They've already withstood one challenge, I think a federal ruling that could have had a ripple effect that could have upended the agreements. And Greg Zeller did this in many instances, along with Ken Feinberg, in conjunction with a number, two, three dozen attorneys involved in terms of plaintiff's attorneys. It's not an ideal solution. There is no ideal solution when you're talking about trying to make people whole or compensate people for such a tragic loss. But given the timetable, these people have to make decisions, I think, by next week about accepting or rejecting. So by the time, this is going to be, I think, a done issue, and then we can shift attention to the litigation where the defendants are somebody other than the state.
The legislature could still provide more money.
Right. Well, they could, right. But
but in the meantime, we've talked several times here about what how little $5 million was in this case, and now we you can look and see what this means.
You know, that, I think that's a good point, Jim, because when you talk about $5 million, you know, that's a lot of money. But when you think about the damage that was caused and the changes that it meant immediately for particularly the 19-year-old who's now paralyzed for the rest of his life, you realize that that's not a lot of money. And no amount of money will make a difference, but certainly you hope that more than $5 million will flow into this formula so that maybe it could be a little easier for those folks.
And your husband, Ed Delaney, state rep, has proposed raising the limit to $22 million, which would be simply...
cost of living from the time the bill was enacted. We haven't changed it in 30-some-odd years, and it's disgraceful. I mean, we invite these people to a state facility for a state event. We don't put the building code items in place to make it safe. They get injured, and we say, ah, tough. It's disgraceful. We need to do more than we're doing.
Will the legislature do more?
I don't think so in this session. I think they're going to wait until after these lawsuits have...
until the investigations
until the investigation's
back.
Done. And as I've been saying all along, I don't think they'll have that information by the time the session ends.
I'll be shocked if the investigation doesn't find
well,
a state.
Well, I'm just
but
telling you, I don't think they're going to...
well,
it's not going to get back by March and have time for legislature to do anything with it.
It doesn't matter.
But let me say this. I think Greg Zeller did a good job. He had to follow the law that he's given to work
right.
with. And he's done a good job with it, and it's under very difficult circumstances.
All right. Both Indianapolis and Carmel were negotiating with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange regarding a possible move to Indiana this week. Indianapolis admitted it. Carmel didn't. But in a letter to an unnamed company combined with other sources, Carmel wants to be known as the home of the Merc. That massive investment isn't happy in Illinois and says it could leave. The Carmel letter offers a variety of incentives worth a grand total of $150 million to the mystery company.
Yeah, it would be a lot of tax revenue, and more importantly, with such high-paying jobs and kind of how the financial community is, especially in regards to the Mercantile Exchange, you're seeing that people that will spend money...
It's Pete the Planner there. And today there's word the Merc's staying in Chicago, that the Illinois legislature has made changes in the corporate tax to keep them there. Did Indiana get played, Mike?
I absolutely think the Mercantile Exchange wanted to get the Illinois legislature's attention. There's no question about that, because taxes over there being what they are is very difficult for them. And Indiana having a good tax climate was an ideal place to go look for opportunities.
Especially
and
we never cash the check.
And you should
tax.
Always answer those calls, because you never know
right.
when something like that would become serious. But believe me, I can tell you, during the Lieutenant Governor Mutz's time, we made a trip to Chicago to talk about making it the East Chicago White Sox, which ended up in a new stadium for the White Sox. Believe me, I understand.
Bears, too, for them. I mean, it was extortion, plain and simple. And it was that they were
staying
in Chicago.
But
you've got
to answer those calls.
Hard to believe that the Chicago Mercantile Exchange would leave Chicago, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And especially, you know, you've got to be able to fly in and out of there. You can't do that very
and this
well.
Isn't the only, it's not just Chicago Mercantile. Sears Holdings, which is
they've been talking to Ohio.
Sears, they were talking to other states. They got John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, basically to put $400 million on the table. So all of these Illinois-based companies, this was a smart move if you want to look at it in a raw business
smart
sense.
Smart move for them.
For them.
Yeah, but you do have to answer those calls
sure.
if you're somebody that's
good
at being acquired.
Finally, there was huge news this week from the Indianapolis Zoo. Plans were unveiled for a $30 million exhibit that will put orangutans on display while they try to protect the endangered species. Zoo officials are calling the initiative the Campaign for Conservation and Community Saving the Orangutans. More than half of the money has already been raised thanks to a number of large donors, including the Cummins Foundation, the Lilly Endowment, and Myrta Pulliam. The orangutan exhibit will allow visitors to have close ground-level encounters. Visitors can also see them from aerial rides above.
I think that everything that we do at the Indianapolis Zoo starts with the idea of conservation. We know that we need to make a difference in the world, and so we look for where those differences are most critical and then go out and do something about it. Orangutans are among the most endangered animals on the planet, and it's just sort of incomprehensible to think that they may become totally extinct before I die, and we just can't let that happen.
Michael Crowther of the Indianapolis Zoo there, Ann Delaney. Why orangutans in Indianapolis?
Why not? No, I mean, obviously, it gives them the opportunity to expand the zoo, which is great for the city. At the same time, you can make a pitch that you're saving an endangered species. And I think there was only, besides Mr. Crowther, only one person who's happy about that story that day, and that's the governor, because it relegated the fact that he lost $320 million to below the
poll in favor. Wow. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwantes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Cello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.